Welcome back to Be More Super, the podcast, where we explore the world of entertainment with celebrity interviews from your favorite movies and TV shows. So grab your popcorn and let's get to know these stars better and what really makes them super. We are brought to you by PropStore.com, where you can find your very own piece of entertainment memorabilia from screen-used props to costumes. Now, here's your host, Brian Garner.
So on this week's episode of Be More Super, the podcast, we've got a real treat. If we've got any Peter Pan fans out there is a new film that is out, which isn't like a typical Peter Pan film. And we've got the writer, producer, director and star, Livia De Paulis. Livia, welcome to the show, my love.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
And this film is just magical. It really, really is. And, you know, the great thing about this show that I do, there are hidden gems out there amongst the plethora of films and content that we can just, you know, discover. And to get a chance to actually discover films like this one, it's just magical. It really, really is. Because, I mean, I will tell you my thoughts on it throughout the interview because I just think it's wonderful. But if you can give all the viewers and listeners, you know, a bit of a rundown of what the film is about.
Yes, so the movie is titled The Lost Girls, and it's an adaptation from a book from Laurie Fox, which came out in 2003, and it's now been printed again because of the movie. And it follows four generations of women, which are descended from the original Wendy Darling, from J.M. Barrie, Peter Pan. And she's now an old lady played by Vanessa Redgrave. And she, in the first scene of the movie, she meets her granddaughter, who's also called Wendy Jr. And she tells her how Peter Pan will come when she will be a bit older and will take her to Neverland, and kind of warns her about the wonders and dangers of what this mythical place really is for the girls of this lineage. Does this make sense?
Yeah, I mean, this film has got so many layers. It's unbelievable. So me and my wife, we watched it, we sat down, and you know what? I wanted to ask so many questions, you know, throughout the film. And me and my wife was like asking each other questions. And it all came apparent towards the end. I don't want to ruin it to, you know, for anyone. I mean, it's a great watch. It really is. And you mentioned that obviously it's based on a book by Laurie Fox. And obviously now it's being reprinted. And now you're on the front cover of the book.
My favorite book.
Which, do you know what? I wanted to ask, what attracted you to this book? What attracted you to taking this and putting it onto screen?
So I read the book in 2003. I was at a hairdresser in New York, and I was reading a magazine called Bust Magazine, which is kind of a feminist magazine that they publish in New York, and they have their book reviews, and I read about this book, and me being a great fan of Peter Pan since I was a child, I immediately was like, oh, I'm going to read this. So then I went to Barnes & Noble's, as one used to do back in the days, and I bought the book, and I read it, and it blew me away. It was so, it resonated with me so much as a young woman, and I was trying to, you know, figure out who I was and how I was going to, you know, who I was going to become. I had moved to New York from Italy a couple of years before. And obviously, in those first years in New York, there was a big process of growing up for me and kind of a reinvention and being this, you know, I was no longer this Italian girl coming from this family and going to the school and doing these things. And I had the chance to, you know, kind of the freedom to decide and discover who I was going to be. And the book really touched on some themes that, okay, let's put it this way. One doesn't move so far away if one is very happy where she is. So dreaming and daydreaming had a big part in my adolescent and in my childhood. I had a very vivacious imagination, and it was also a form of escapism in many ways. And so when I read it, I really, you know, I really kind of recognized a lot of things. And I thought at the time I was sort of like an aspiring actress, theater actress in New York. I was just hustling a lot to try and get into it. And so, you know, I did think, oh, this would be a fabulous movie, but it, you know, it didn't occur to me that eventually I was going to make that movie and write that movie. I was never thought of myself as a writer, never thought of myself as a director, probably because at the time there weren't enough, you know, women to look at as directors. And so if you don't see that reflected outside of yourself, you don't even imagine that you could do that yourself. And so I just gave the book to a bunch of girlfriends, and I was like, you've got to read this book. This is the book to read. And then many years later, almost 20 years later, you know, eventually I did become a filmmaker. I made my first feature film in 2000. It was released in 2013. And after doing my first feature, which was a micro budget, I thought, oh, maybe I can tackle that now. Mm. And obviously it was a long process, but here we are.
I mean, what inspired you not to just wear the star's hat, but also director, producer, and writer? Because, you know, it must have been hell at times to juggle all those responsibilities and hats. So, you know, how did you actually cope throughout the filmmaking process of wearing all those hats?
Right. So, so my first feature film, which was a micro budget, I decided to make after the financial crisis of 2008, because I actually had sort of achieved my dream of becoming a stage actress in New York. And then, you know, with the financial crisis, the companies that I was working with didn't have any money anymore. So kind of everything kind of, you know, everybody had to take a step back. And so that's how I made my first feature. And having no money, you know, I did everything. And in that case, I really co-wrote that film to create a part for myself. And I wasn't really going to direct it. But then again, having no money, I really wanted it to be directed by a woman. And at the time, with no money, the only women director that I had access to were, you know, just as young as me. They had done one short film. And so I thought, you know what, I might just give it a go myself. I had a friend who had done the same thing, an actor friend who had just directed a movie that he had written and starred in. And he was like, you can totally do it. I just did it. You can do it. And so I did that. And that was crazy. completely crazy. And also like really with no money. So it was really, really hard. And then when it came to make the Oscars, so I was set to, you know, I wrote it myself. I wrote it on spec. So, you know, if you don't have anybody to commission you the work, you just do it because you want to. So I did that. And I was going to direct it. And I also was set to play the lead part. It is an ensemble piece, so I'm not in every single scene. So that makes it a bit easier in that way. And as for producing, obviously I worked with other producers, you know, while I was on set. I wasn't the producer, like there was a producer that was looking after everything. But I find that with the type of work that I do, in the end, I think every filmmaker ends up producing, because to get the movie to the point where you're actually shooting, and there's so much work to do, that if you rely on a third person to do that work, chances are the movie is going to take a very long time to get made, or it might never get made, you know, and nobody's going to care as much as you do. And so that's how, but just to be clear, when I was on set, I did not have any producing responsibility. By that point, everything had been prepped, and there was Sam Tipperhill, who was great at, you know, managing everything.
I mean, with this film, obviously, is an adaptation, I think that's the word, from the book to the screen. So your collaboration with the author, Laurie Fox, how did that work to actually... you know, take what's in the book to actually on screen? Because I can imagine, you know, this is a book that Laurie has written, and now you're translating it. So, you know, it's going to be on screen. So how difficult was that process to actually get a good sort of adaptation, you know, that what we see?
So in retrospect, I could not have picked a harder book to adapt. I mean, the book has got five generations, not four, which was, you know, I tried with five and it just wasn't going to work. But what was great about my collaboration with Laurie was, first of all, our first meeting. It was kind of mind blowing that this young girl from Italy, I went to meet with her. At the time, she was living in Portland, Oregon, and I went to meet her, and just to, you know, she was like, yeah, I'll, you know, I honestly reached out to her on Facebook. This is how it went down. Like, I reached out to her on Facebook, and she was like, okay. And I had this movie out, so she could see that I had made a movie, and the movie had a theatrical release in New York and LA, and it was available. So she was able to see my work. And then she was like, well, I'd like to meet you. So we met. And when we met, we had a cocktail in an hotel in Portland, Oregon. And it was kind of mind blowing that two women in such different age and completely different background, completely different education, completely different. We kind of knew each other. We really connected. She recognized that I saw something that was very personal to her. And I saw that because that was very personal to me too. And I think that is a success for art, really, for any kind of work that a creative might do when it touches another person in that way. And then for the result of the film, which is, as I said, very different from the book, I was so happy that she was happy with the result. She was genuinely really, really taken. She's like, I cannot watch the movie without crying on my way through. So that it's one of the highlight of creative collaborations of my life, really, to have had this, like, we're very different people, and yet we have a vision of certain things that is so intimate and so similar. I mean,
with the book, obviously, when someone reads a book, in their mind, they get this sort of, you know, this imagination of what the story is going to look like. So I can only imagine when you took on that book, it was a challenge to actually include as much stuff as you could from the book to the actual adaptation. So was there, you know, certain things that you had to have in the film, and were there things that you wish you had from the book? Because obviously time constraints to actually make this, you know, I am sure that if you included everything, it would be like a 4, 5, 6 hour film. But, you know, were there certain things that you had to have in the film, and were there things that you wish you could have had on screen?
I'm sorry, there's some work upstairs. Okay. There's nothing I can do about that. So with the book, clearly, you know, it's left to the reader's imagination to fill in the blanks that are deliberately left for the reader to kind of have his own journey with his own mind. With film, it's a little bit harder to do that because the viewer expects, has an expectation to, and we're more and more used to having films that kind of spells it out clearly and wrap it all up for us in the end, so that there is not a lot of guesswork to be done. So for the book, to what I missed, you know, I had a wonderful scene with a mermaid that I had to cut for financial reasons. So that's the first one that I'm like, oh yeah, I wish I could have had that. It was kind of, did it really change the story? Not so much, but it was another one more like feminine element that I thought it would have been a beautiful scene, but it would have been expensive, so I had to cut that. And in terms of the writing, in the end, I'm very happy with the script, with what I left out, because the movie is very, as you said, very complex and very layered already. And if I would have had any more, it would have probably been a mess.
I mean, this film literally, you know, there were times when I was like thinking, is this real? Is this an imagination? Is this, you know, and I'm still questioning that now. Literally, it's a film that makes you think for days after, which I think is great, because when you say that there's films out there that just spell it out, they're sort of, I would call, the two-dimensional films where you just see everything on screen. But I like my films that make you think, that make you question, that are thought-provoking.
I agree, and it was one of my, really, my main wish for the film was to, was for the audience to receive it and, you know, have some reflections on it. So it was deliberate. Now, that is not necessarily, doesn't necessarily put people at ease, and it might be seen as a flaw of the film. I don't think it is. I am happy when people are questioning it, and I'm happy when people are like, I'm not sure if this really happened or not, because the whole idea is that these women are not really sure if this really happened or not. And, and you know, there are studies in which our perception of reality is very much influenced from our vision of reality. So you can't really, you know, there are studies according to which our memories are not really adhering to, are not as factual as we think they are.
I mean, I've got to say, I mean, my impression of what's gone on, I mean, I left it thinking that could it be like an inherited sort of mental health illness amongst
the women of this generation. Yeah. So if you want to go, if you want to think of, say my mother had a difficult relationship with her father, say, that influenced her relationship with men, that influenced her relationship with me, or the way she brought me up, that influenced my relationship with men, and eventually will influence if it doesn't get processed and resolved in a way or another. You know, somebody in this lineage will have to do the work to to kind of figure out how to change this pattern that's been set by the grandmother of the grandmother of the grandmother and gets passed down through generations. So we inherit from, you know, our ancestors' great traits and gifts, and we also inherit some kind of neurotic stuff that we don't even know where it's coming from.
I mean, it's very cleverly done on screen. It makes you really, really question and think. I mean, let's talk about casting, because casting plays a crucial role in bringing these characters to life. How did you go around selecting the cast? Because it's not a small cast. You know, you've got some legends there as well, like Vanessa Redgrave. You've got Ian Glen, which I just adore. I think it's awesome. and he plays an excellent Captain Hook, honestly. When you were saying about being uncomfortable at times, he made me feel uncomfortable. He plays that character to a T. I'm going to put the poster up of the film here, which is a beautiful poster, by the way. So what went into the casting and what went into the decision-making? Because some of them, was it easy to get Vanessa Redgrave? I mean, was she up for the role, you know, straight away?
She was. And I think that role for an actress of that age, it's just a great role. She was very happy to play that part. So it was an offer, and she accepted, and that was that. So yeah, and the role of Hook, for instance, which I agree with you, Ian Glen is one of the best actors I've ever worked with, one of the favorite people I've ever met in my life. He's a pro, he's a trooper, he's amazing in the role. But that role was not easy to cast because he's a predator, is ambiguous, and it's a risky role to take for an actor because it's kind of wacky and weird. And I think also we cast it in 2020, so with the whole still echo of the Me Too movement, I encountered some resistance in casting a role of a predator. And also because the movie has surreal aspects, it is wacky at times. So it was great to have Ian, who really just went for it. He was committed to it was a delight to work with him. So that was a little bit more complicated to cast that role. And then we had Jolie Richardson, who I love. I absolutely love her. You know, Jolie is an actress that can come across as cold sometimes, but I actually thought that she has a vulnerability that's hidden, and so it's even more compelling to me. And I thought she was perfect for the part. And I'm, you know, I absolutely love her character, like what she did with the character. And then we had a lot of fun casting the young actors, which is really one of the things I enjoy the most. in working as a, you know, in directing, I really love working with young actors. And, you know, they audition. They audition, and we did callbacks during lockdown. So, I kind of already had an idea, like, I kind of cast in my mind on the first audition. I already knew who I wanted. But, you know, then you have to do callbacks. Especially for Louis Partridge, I had to fight.
he plays a fantastic Peter Pan.
Believe it or not, I had to fight for Peter Pan because the idea, the way it was written, and the original idea was to cast somebody that was more like an obvious Peter Pan, so like a blonde, you know, that kind of look. But when Louis auditioned, I thought he was such a great actor. And he really brought the scene alive. And even the casting director that was reading with him, she completely, like, she was just reading, but she got like totally into the scene. Like, I was like, I think this is the best actor. And then we did callbacks during lockdown. And I just had a bit of a conversation. I didn't feel like having these kids doing like a scene on Zoom for me. So I just kind of, just asked them, what are you doing? How are you spending your time? I felt, I really felt for teenagers during that time. I thought it was hard for everybody, but I think for teenagers, we have, they really need to engage and go out. And I thought, what are these kids doing? And he said that he was teaching himself to play the piano. I was like, okay, it's not like, on video games all day, which is what I was doing. So I thought, wow, I was very impressed.
Oh, well, I'm sure with the talent that that young man's got, he must be an amazing piano player through that learning. I wanted to ask, what was your favorite scene to shoot as a director and a favorite scene to do as an actor? Because there's so many great scenes.
So my favorite scene of the movie is, I cannot say that it was my favorite scene to shoot because the conditions were crazy and we had a COVID scare that day and it was very difficult. We shot at the end of we shot in the summer of 2020, so that was at the end of the first lockdown. So we had this COVID, protocol in place that we kind of came up with ourselves. And so it was not an easy shoot, I have to say. But my favorite scene of the movie is the movie where Peter comes back to young Vanessa. Let's put it this way. And when Wendy, original Wendy Darling, is in the bedroom and is telling the story to her daughter Jane. And then he comes back, and that scene, which is actually from Jay and Barry, I didn't write that scene. That's my favorite scene. So, the one I didn't write. But anyway, so that is my favorite scene when I watch it. It's the one that really always gets me. I very much enjoy shooting the scene with a little Wendy in the bedroom when she finds the box with that girl, Emilia, like that young girl. That was it was a really it's fun to work with kids, but as a director, it's really fun to work with kids for me. As an actress, my favorite scene, I want to say the end, to be honest. Maybe because that was the last day and I was
Oh,
very
wow.
happy to be done. It was a relief. I think I had a lot of fun shooting that. And I also enjoyed shooting that dinner scene. I have a dinner scene in my first feature as well. And I like shooting dinner scenes and playing dinner scenes because you have, you can really play and it's set and you're just kind of, I don't know, there's something about being very contained and playing with more than one partner that I think
That
it's
was
kind of.
that was a great scene, and I love her friend, the one with the cape. That is
Oh.
so nice. And even my wife went, "Oh, how sweet." But I'm not looking forward to my girls getting to that age and potentially being like that with us. I mean, obviously this whole experience is going to be a learning experience as an actor and a director. I mean, what's been the biggest lesson that you've learned from this project, taken away as a director and an actor?
Well, as a director, especially if I, so let's say it this way. In my next feature, there isn't a part for myself. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't want to do this again, because I actually do enjoy the craziness of it. I really, it's a flow state. So you're kind of in a different dimension, and the level of concentration, I kind of enjoy that. But I do want to try and just direct to see what I can do with that. Because in my first feature, I also acted. And so I look forward to just sit. and as I said, as a director, I think an extra couple of weeks of prep would have been very nice to have, because you get into prep and all of a sudden, especially if you're acting in it as well, all of a sudden there's no time. Like, it's the same. Mm. Prepping is the same as shooting, because you're prepping the film, and especially this type of film is complicated. So the prep, and you know, you're talking to the actors and you're already working with the actors and you're working on yourself and you're working on your part and you're working with all the heads of departments. And I think the more time you have in prep, the better the experience will be.
And what would you like audiences to take away? What is the message and you know, from all this hard work that you've put in that we see on screen, what would you like to take to take away?
So I knew from the beginning the movie was going to be polarized, because I mean, there are like the hardcore, like Peter Pan lovers who are not happy with it being reinterpreted. They're not happy with me not being British. Like, you know, I mean, you know, like, that's just the reality. It's just the reality of the situation. It's okay, but it's there. And so, like, how dare you commenting on her, you know, masterpiece. And then there are like people that have reached out to me on Instagram and at screenings. You know, you go to the screenings and at the end you see women with like the mascara rolling down and they come to you like, they don't even know what to say. And I just had the screening in Rome and I had similar experience. I had people I've never met in my life writing me like long emails, like on Instagram, like long messages about like this and that. And to me, that is wonderful.
Yeah.
To me, that is wonderful. That is kind of the takeaway. And I didn't make this movie to tell people what to do. You know?
Thing is though, the problem is with the world is that people always go out their way to put projects down. Critics, I think a lot of critics out there, literally, I think they only think that they're there to pull apart projects and not to actually appreciate the hard work that's been put into it, and actually go and watch a movie with the intention to enjoy it, to take away something from that movie. I mean, I always rate movies on my wife, because my wife is like the biggest critic. And I tell you what, at the end of this movie, she was bawling her eyes out. She was crying.
There are people that are very touched.
Yeah, and it's quite nice, because obviously the ending. I mean, do you feel that if this film was directed by a man, it would be completely different? Because I feel it would.
I think it would be, because it is such a soft sensibility. Mm. And you know, there is a movie, Northern European, I can't recall if it's called The Worst Person in the World. If you haven't seen it, I recommend it. And it's a completely feminine story, and it's directed by a man. And I was so surprised it was directed by a man, because it's got such a feminine sensibility. So I don't want to say, you know, obviously it depends on the individual. But I think it is a general, like, perspective, I would say it touches on so many small things that are so inherently feminine that I don't know. It would take a very special individual to have that type of fine sensibility for certain things.
I mean, me personally, I think it's fantastic to see more female directors. I've had quite a few female directors on the show because since having two girls, you know, it's sort of like you sort of want them to have role models and to look up to certain people. And I quite like the fact that we are getting more prominent female characters on our screens and people that are changing the landscape, because directing is often, you know, a boys' club, you know, in America.
It really is.
So I'm glad that that's changing. I mean, obviously in the States, do you feel that the tide is changing in that way, or do you have a fair way to go yet?
Well, I think there's still a fair way to go. I mean, I don't want to get too much into it, but I'm sure, you know, because it gets to a point where they say, we're just going to get the person that has more experience. And there's a lot of female filmmakers that, you know, it took 10 years between the first and the second feature. And in those 10 years, a guy, same level of talent. We're not talking the extraordinary, and we're not talking the bad people. We're just talking people that are trying to do something, and they're, you know, hard workers, and, you know, same level. Right. In the past 10 years, I think a man or a guy, a male director, might have had more opportunities to direct and hence develop his craft than women. And I'm not even talking about myself, because I consider myself very lucky to have made two feature films, 8 years apart, which apparently was the average time for a woman between her first and her second. Wow. I have friends that have made movies, girlfriends that have made movies, you know, 10 years ago that haven't had the chance to make their second feature. And for me, when I went to make my second feature, because 8 years had gone by, they were like, well, this is really like your first feature. And now it's still like, well, you're still kind of like a young, you know, young director. And I'm like, when am I going to be considered like, you know, like, you know, middle age, like, you know, mid career, like, I don't know. So there's still, you know, there's still like, and it affects you. It affects you because, it affects the way you present yourself, because if you know that you're going to have to be this young director, you're going to continue to be a young director, right? Like a young, up and coming, whatever. So there's a lot, you know, there's still a lot of work to do. That said, there's so many more opportunities. There is the phenomenon of Barbie, and I'm just celebrating it all.
Excellent. I mean, what are you working on next? Can you share anything? Any tidbits?
I'm working on an adaptation of a book. It's a ghost story.
I love ghosts.
It's gothic, and it's not really like a supernatural thriller, but it's a gothic fable. And it still has a female protagonist and a male antagonist. and it's an adaptation from a book. And it's called The Last to See Me. And we'll see how long it takes for me to get that made. So we'll see.
Oh, excellent. Well, I would love to have you back on the show once you've got that made. And I'd love to see it whenever it's made, because I love ghost stories. I love the supernatural, where it's not as graphic on screen, it makes you think. Do you know, like that bump in the middle of the night? That to me is more scary than seeing a monster.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's really about the feeling of a presence and what is that, and is it there, is it not there? So yeah, and why, you know, and I think ghost story, or the way I'm looking at this ghost story, it's again an opportunity to think about life.
Excellent, excellent. Livia, you've been a great guest. Thank you so much for coming on. The Lost Girls, go and watch it now. You will not be disappointed. It's one of these films that I wouldn't have necessarily gone out and watched. So this is why I love this show, because I get to watch films, you know, and shows that I wouldn't normally watch. And I am glad that I watched it, because it's just amazing work. Beautiful, stunning. The colours, everything is fantastic. But Livia, thank you so much.
And thanks to you, and thank you for the show. I really, you know, I listened to a few episodes, and I'm like, oh, this guy is doing tremendous work. So thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Be More Super, the podcast. This podcast has been brought to you by PropStore.com. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please subscribe and leave a rating and review. To stay up to date with Be More Super and get all the behind-the-scenes content, you can follow us on Instagram at Be More Super the Podcast and on Twitter at Be More Super. Keep safe and stay super.